Hi, this is John Hall, producer of Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley. And I'm just stopping the show before we get to it today to let you know that I'm going to bring you a best of one of my favorite shows from Catholic Conversations with our guest, Monsignor Richard Sosman, who unfortunately passed away from COVID earlier this week. We're at a huge loss. I will really miss Monsignor. I can still see him sitting in the lobby here at the station, before we recorded this show. Seems like he was just here, but it's been over a month and a half, I think, since I last had him in the studio. But this is a best of one of our first show with Monsignor. May he rest in peace.
Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the generous support of Meyer Bramley Insurance, serving Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas. Meyer Bramley Insurance can be reached online at mbi.agency or via phone at 844-890-2626. Catholic Conversations, where we talk about faith, family, and finance.
This hour, we need your support in raising at least $250 so we can maximize the contributions. Please text the word GIVE to 309-233-0086. Text like GIVE 10, GIVE 20, GIVE 50, and it will set you up to make a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio. Again, for every dollar we raise, we're going to get almost $4 back. So please, again, text the word GIVE and an amount to 309-233-0086. Again, that's 309-233-0086. We are back, Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you missed the show last week, make sure you go to Apple iTunes or Podbean to listen to the podcast. Or as always, you can download our app at the App Store on Android or Apple devices. We have another fantastic guest with us this week. One of these weeks, we're going to have not a fantastic guest, I think. We'll see. This week, Monsignor Richard Sosman is with us, the vice postulator of the cause of canonization of Fulton Sheen and pastor of St. Valentine's Church in Peru. Thank you for being with us. That's quite a mouthful.
Yes.
Sounds like a lot of job duties.
Well, I've always had a lot of job duties. So
it keeps you busy, right?
It does. It does.
They say the idle hands or the devil's playground?
That's right.
So better to stay busy and holy as opposed to spend idle time doing whatever the body could lead us to.
That's right.
Never
that's
good
right.
things. Thank you for being with us. We're going to talk a little bit about Archbishop Fulton Sheen.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some folks on previously about the museum up in El Paso. We're going to have the Miracle Baby's mother on next week.
Mm-hmm.
Bonnie is going to be with us. Again, thank you for being with us. What can you tell us about Archbishop Fulton Sheen? How did you get involved with the cause for canonization?
Well, I was judicial vicar of the Diocese of Peoria when Bishop Jenke became our new bishop, and he came and asked me, he said, could you recommend the names of a couple of priests who could do the process of beatification? And, you know, it's a complicated process. A lot of it's ruled by canon law. So a couple of weeks later, I said to him, I gave him a couple of names. He said, why don't you think a little bit more? So 2 weeks later, I gave him two more names, and then he looked at me and said, no, I want you to do it.
He sounds like he was prodding you there from the beginning.
Right. I didn't know that. I should have picked up that signal. But I then undertook the process. When I started, when I called my mother and told her, she said, oh. She said, we always thought of Bishop Sheen as a good speaker and a good Catholic, but I never thought of him as a saint. And that was kind of my attitude in the first week or so. After we opened the P.O. box, though, and it was mentioned once on one media outlet, the next week I was in the post office. I thought, should I check that box? I thought, no, it's only been a week. Well, I went and 277 letters spilled out onto the floor.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and then reading those and reading people who knew Bishop Sheen when he was alive and the kinds of things that he did, I was quickly convinced that he would be a saint someday.
And when this was what, early 2000s, right?
It was 2002. And so we undertook the process. And in 2008, we sent the 6,500 pages of testimonies, archival materials, reviews, theological reviews of his books. We sent 6,700 pages over to Rome. And at the same time, I was going to Rome to work in the Congregation for Clergy. That was January 2008. And so I was able to be there at the Congregation for Saints across the street when they opened it up. And so, but then when we sent everything from Peoria, that's when the local cause ends. You send everything you can collect over. And so my job really kind of had ended in Peoria anyway. And then I was appointed the coordinator of international outreach. And so then I would buy Sheen's books in French or German or Polish or, you know, Italian, Spanish. And then I would give them to the those translations to people from those countries who worked in the Holy See. And half the time they said, oh, I already know Bishop Sheen.
Yeah.
So even in translation, they know him well.
What is the process for canonization? What does that look like these days? What are there requirements? Or,
well, sure. There's first of all the diocesan phase, which we just talked about a little bit. You collect indications of holiness and of any sort of extraordinary phenomena, even during lifetime, and you also you contact the witnesses. So the witness questionnaire was 300. And some questions with several hundred sub-questions.
And these are people that actually knew Bishop Sheen.
Yes, or experts. Maybe we had a couple of experts in his life, but most of the men had known Bishop Sheen personally. Many times they knew him when he started his media ministry. And so then we could skip the first 100 questions, which dealt with his life here in El Paso, Illinois, and in Peoria. We delved into all kinds of facets, elements, even some, we ask questions about negative elements because you want to cover those things too. And then you have theological experts, people with license or doctorate in theology, review all the books, and there are 68 books, and that becomes part of the acts. And then archival research. And so historians went through the Sheen archives in Peoria and in Rochester at the Propagation of the Faith in New York, and they gathered copies of all the kinds of things they could there too. So that we sent that then. The local phase then, when it's entered in Rome, the Venerable Servant of God then, as they're known when it's accepted, then you start to look for miracles. A miracle, of course, in the theological and technical senses, an indication from God that he wants this person to be raised up. And so he's done some miracle through that person's favor, intercession. And in the case of Bishop Sheen, it would be, or any candidate today, it's a medical miracle, because those you can prove without impeachment. You can look at and have hard physical proof that something extraordinary happened. And then there were three miracles we investigated and sent to Rome. And the third one was the Engstrom baby. And that was so clear. And so that's the one then that was presented by the Congregation of Saints to the medical experts, to the theological commissions there. And we moved on from there.
I'm sure that a lot of people may have heard about the Engstrom baby miracle. And again, Bonnie's going to be on next week. So we might not get too deep into that one. What were the other two, though? I'm not familiar with those.
Sure. There was a baby in Pittsburgh who was, when it was born, it swallowed some of the fluid and some of the feces and
the nasty.
Yes. Yeah. And this was about 20 years ago, and in that time, it was very hard to save a baby that was born that way. And the priest came to the hospital. They baptized the child, I think, with the first name Fulton, and they had been praying. Their parents were greatly devoted to the to Fulton Sheen. The father, I think, was an Eastern Catholic, and the mother was a Latin Rite Catholic. And so then the baby was cured, and so that looked miraculous. And so when we investigated it, we interviewed all those witnesses and medical experts, and et cetera, and that was the first one sent to Rome. And the other one was a woman in Champaign who, while they were doing surgery to repair her lung or to remove a diseased section of her lung, they tore her aorta.
Wow, that's not good.
No, I think they said 22, not, anyway, It was a substantial cut, and she was losing about a liter of blood per beat.
Wow.
Yeah, and so...
And I think you only have like a couple gallons. So.
Right. And so the doctors, nurses, right away a nurse left and showed the family into the grieving room. You know, you'll have to wait for the doctor. Right away the husband there began to pray, Bishop Sheen, pray for us. Bishop Sheen, pray for us. When the priest arrived, he went there and they prayed together to Bishop Sheen. And the doctors, one of the nurses said, that one of the doctors said it was consistency of wet tissue paper.
Wow.
And so they managed to stitch it up. They completed the surgery on the lung, and there was never a problem with the heart again, even though it was torn.
Wow. So three miracles is the required minimum. Is that right?
No. Well, now under John Paul, he changed it to one miracle for beatification, one miracle for canonization.
Okay.
But by miracle, we know there are miracles every day in life.
Sure.
You know, radio is a miracle in some way. How do we explain it? You know, but these are verifiable miracles that go through a very rigorous process.
Yeah, I often say, you know, I think one of the, you know, kind of downfalls of current society is that we rely so heavily on science, so that we see things that used to be miracles, and just because we can prove how they work now, we go, oh, well, it's not a miracle anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of, you know, just... For a lot of people, I think that hurts their ability maybe to have that faith.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'd be better off if we went back and said, you know what, even if we can explain how something works, that doesn't mean it's not a miracle that it does work. And so, you know, miracles right. are...
Well, and what's fascinating in these causes is when you talk to non-Catholic doctors and nurses, as well as Catholic ones, they're just confounded. There's no way they can explain, and so they believe it's a miracle.
Yeah, the secular doctors and nurses are probably better witnesses, maybe than
in some ways that's true.
They probably, I mean, just knowing a lot of non-Catholics, they probably try harder to explain something away, or try to give that information of, well, it's I did a really good job sewing that heart up. So, it wasn't a miracle.
Sure.
Can you talk to us a little bit? I know there were changes under Pope John Paul II. Can you give us kind of some of those were? Are you familiar with the process before? Obviously you weren't working on saints canonization before John Paul II changed, but.
Well, over the centuries since the canonization process has existed, the year 1200 is about when it, arose. There have been different changes, innovations introduced. For instance, we talked about miracles. Well, in the 1700s, other types of miracles were, emotional healings or even other...
kind of harder to prove.
Yes, and so those were discounted already in 1700s. More recently, cancer, because it can go into remission spontaneously. Although it's used once in a while, it's not, generally speaking, one of the miracles used for canonization. So I think there was a gradual reduction in the number of miracles. I tend to remember maybe when I was in high school, it was four for canonization, maybe four for beatification, and then it was three. But
we're more rigorous about them.
Well, the point is that it always was rigorous.
Yeah.
And so when you come to something that's absolutely miraculous and it's been, put through all of the tests and, examined from all aspects, then I think that was the realization under Pope John Paul was that do we really need to, put candidates two or three times through that test when if something is truly miraculous, then one should suffice.
Makes sense. Yeah, absolutely. The other change that I've heard of, and I'm not real up on it, is the devil's advocate. Does that still exist, or is that, I've heard that went away, and what did that entail?
Well, promoter of justice still exists, and at one time they were called the devil's advocate because they had to oppose with any sort of objections they could arise, that could be raised. The point was to eliminate someone who just had that as their job, because the search is for the truth.
Sure.
And then to ask everyone involved in the process to be skeptical when it seems they need to be.
Yeah. This isn't politics. We're not just trying to dig up dirt just just purpose.
Yeah. Right. Or just raise objections just because that's your job, although there's no real way that that objection could be founded.
Yeah.
You know, and so that what they did is lost a lot of time just trying to answer objections that someone came up with because they had to, which were not truly objections.
When the church says that someone is a saint, what does that mean? What is the church really saying?
The declaration of canonization is that the person is with God in heaven. And so without doubt, they are in with God in heaven, and they can their prayers are heard by God. And so in a special way. So we can pray to them, we can venerate them, honor them, imitate them without doubt, without question.
One of the things that that I'm curious about is prior to so you have to have those people that are you know praying for Archbishop Sheen to intercede on their behalf, mm-hmm. and they're doing that before he's a saint,
right?
And if they don't, then we don't ever have the miracles attributed to him. And
mm-hmm.
To me, that's always seemed curious. Like if I was going to ask for someone to intercede, I would probably go, you know, either straight to a saint or the Holy Mother, or you know, pray to Jesus. I don't know. I've just been curious about that. Like what would cause somebody to say, you know what, I'm going to ask Bishop Sheen to intercede upon my behalf, even though he's not a saint yet in this particular case?
Well, and that's part of the mystery of the whole process and the beauty of it, really,
yeah.
is that, yes, there are guilds and legions and groups that try to make known their candidate and get prayer cards out and things like that. But for someone who's not blessed, you cannot have public devotion or worship in their name. And so so often that is also seen as an additional sign of sainthood or of holiness, that so many people are drawn to their example.
What where are we at in the process now for Bishop Sheen?
Sure. The decree of beatification so that he should be named blessed was issued on July 5th. 2019, and so the diocese then, as the actor of the cause, the promoter of the cause, approached the Secretary of State with several dates and asked for the date of beatification. When that's ironed out in Rome, then we'll know that. In addition, any miracle or possible miracle that might have happened after July 5th, 2019, we can consider for canonization, even if it's before the actual ceremony of beatification.
Gotcha.
And so any of your listeners has anything miraculous happen or that they think might
yeah.
be, or even if they want to just express their devotion to Bishop Sheen, you can have, you can contact the office in Peoria.
Awesome. What is the process of the beatification look like? Is it a big celebration?
The naming of the person as blessed is a celebration. The cardinal will come from Rome. This started under Pope Benedict. He said, well, we can do the beatifications in the local churches and the places where they were promoted.
Sure.
And so...
kind of to pay back to those people and, you know, to
in some ways,
let them
yes.
be involved.
Uh-huh. And it didn't need to be in St. Peter's Square, although that's beautiful. That's now reserved for canonization.
Gotcha.
So beatification will be a ceremony in Peoria whenever the date is. And it will be kind of probably a Sheen Festival weekend, you could
yeah.
say.
And that'll probably be on the calendar going forward then.
Yes, as soon as we know, it'll become publicized.
Awesome. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking to Monsignor Sosman from St. Valentine's Parish in Peru, and he is here on behalf of the cause for canonization for Archbishop Sheen. Again, thank you for being with us. If you're just tuning in, you missed a great first segment, go back and listen to us on Apple iTunes or on Podbean. This is Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
You're listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio.
We need Catholic radio because we really need an influence that's countercultural. We need an influence that's going to remind us of what's really important in our lives. Remind us about our relationship with the Lord. Remind us about our faith as our top priority. Remind us of why we're here on this earth, to make a decision to become more and more like Christ. so that we can not only follow him, but follow him into an eternity of salvation and help others to get into that eternity of salvation as well. There are just truly thousands of hours, you know, that are within the culture itself that are trying to take our minds and our hearts off of the Lord, off of our salvation, off of helping others to their salvation. And we really do need to have an influence, a continual reminder, as it were, of what's really important, where the Lord is really calling us, what really matters. And that's the job of Catholic Radio.
We need to hear from you to fund our yearly operating costs. Pledge your support for Catholic Radio in Central Illinois now. Donate online at CatholicSpiritRadio.com.
We are back, Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. We have Monsignor Sosman with us, who is not only at St. Valentine's Church in Peru, but also St. Mary's and
St. Joseph.
And St. Joseph. Those I should have been able to remember. They kind of go hand in hand. And he's the vice postulator of the cause of canonization for Archbishop Fulton Sheen. Again, thank you for being with us. What I was going to ask you before we took the break, where is Archbishop Sheen? We had some issues kind of getting him back from New York, and that's all been resolved. So where is he? Where is he at now? And
he's in his mortal remains are in the Cathedral of Saint Mary the Immaculate Conception in Peoria. There's kind of a side chapel, and he's at the front of that.
And
it's a beautiful area.
Is that where he's going to remain then? Or
yeah,
what's
that's the plan? There's going to be some work done on the, to make a more formal tomb.
Sure.
Right now it's beautiful as it is, but the diocese wants to do more work and make it absolutely fitting for Bishop Sheen.
Now, when someone becomes a saint, how do the relics work?
Yes. Well, part of the process is to examine the remains and to open the tomb, open the coffin, and look at the remains and see what shape the remains are in. And part of that includes also taking some relics. And so relics, of course, are like conduits directly to the person that can help to animate our prayer to God through that saint. And so relics will be taken, and then some will be distributed and I'm not sure exact process how that will take place afterwards, but that's what happens.
And then a lot of times, there's always relics in the altar, right? Is that
right? Right, right.
And so there's a possibility someday we could have like a Bishop Sheen parish.
Yes, it's
with
true.
A relic in the altar.
Saint Fulton Parish.
Hopefully someday we'll get that up around El Paso or something. We'll need a new parish at some point.
Now, there are also third-class relics, which are relics that are things that are touched to the tomb. So when the body of Bishop Sheen was being taken out of the hearse and brought into the cathedral in Peoria in June, the seminarians all had rosaries wrapped around their hands, and they were the pallbearers. And so they wanted to keep those rosaries as a special remembrance. And then every day, the cathedral is open 7 days a week for visits to the tomb. Make sure to go online to look for the specific hours because those change somewhat. But people touch holy cards. They touch other things to the tomb for third-class relics.
And are things that Bishop Sheen would have touched while he was alive third-class relics?
Second class.
Yeah. Okay. So there's probably folks in El Paso that have had like garage sales over the last 30 years. Well, they're like, I should have hung on to...
Possibly, that's true.
I should have hung on to that. That brings up an interesting question. I saw some people on Twitter that were tweeting a bunch. Someone was selling relics. And the person I don't think was Catholic. It was like an antique store or something. And they had come across them. And then obviously they had a store, so they were selling them. And so there was this conversation that was going on about the fact that it's not allowed to be bought and sold, these relics. Is that
right? No,
and true. So they were kind of having this conversation like, you know, how do we get these back for the church or whatever without...
And there are people who do that too, you know.
So they should just contact their local...
That's part of the madness of the 1970s.
Yeah.
You know, so things were thrown away or buried in cemeteries or given away and, you know.
Yeah.
And now a lot of places are trying to get back at least some of what they had.
So. Going back to your point about the body being examined and... there's some saints that are incorrupt. Is that right?
Yeah.
So if somebody is exhumed and their body is incorrupt, that's probably a pretty good sign that they're. That doesn't happen to most folks,
no.
Right? When we die and get buried.
That's true. That's true. Although with embalming, I think it's more common for someone not to decompose as quickly, we might say.
Okay.
But incorruptibility is not necessarily a sign of sainthood, but it is one of the indicators, perhaps you could say. So the majority of saints are not incorrupt, you know, but there are some that are found sometimes. To be that way.
And is that like a special class of saints? Or
not really, but it's another interesting phenomenon from God that, you know, can inspire us in some way. There was a San Giuseppe Maria Tomasi is incorrupt, and he's buried on the side altar of San Andrea da Valle in Rome. And Father Ed Ohm, who's one of our priests, was an undertaker before he went to seminary.
Oh, wow.
And so he got in a conversation with the sacristan there, and they pulled out the body so he could look at it. And he said, things had happened immediately after death with the hair, with fingernails. This body showed no indication of being dead.
Wow.
So no corruption at all. That's pretty neat.
I saw a couple weeks ago, I think we had a feast day for a saint. I'm completely drawing a blank on which one it was, but there's like a relic of his that liquefies into blood on his
feast. St. Januarius. Yeah.
Yeah.
Three times a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
What are the other times? Do you remember?
One is in May and one is in January, February. I can't remember. There are feast days that are important in Naples.
Yeah. And there's a couple times, I think, during like war that it hasn't happened.
Right. Usually it's seen as not a good thing when it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But what happens is it's dried and attached to the side of this vial. And then when, on the feast day, it'll sort of start to bubble up and boil almost. I mean, it looks like it's boiling.
How many saints are there? Do you know off the top of your head or a guess, a ballpark?
Everyone in heaven is a saint.
Oh, man. That wasn't a trick question.
No.
How many declared saints?
So on All Saints,
saints
Day, we
yeah.
Well, if you look at the martyrology, the Roman martyrology is a book this thick that has the saints that are remembered every day in the Universal Church. And so there are thousands of those. It's going back to the apostles. You know, and so, or Lazarus and Mary and Martha, and, you know, there are even some of the Old Testament prophets and figures are considered saints.
So, and sainthood is infallibly declared by the church. Is that right?
Yes. The declaration of canonization is considered an infallible decree.
Gotcha. Were there miracles that happened while Bishop Sheen was still alive? You had mentioned that sometimes things happen during the person's lifetime.
Yes, and this was a fascinating thing that I never expected, but all kinds of people wrote in with reports. Simply, you know, there was a garbage man sweeping the streets in Baltimore when Bishop Sheen was walking through, and that was when he was in the Catholic Hour, so sometime in World War II, and he said, could I talk to you, Monsignor? And Monsignor Sheen said, I'm late for the bus, but if you walk with me to the bus station. And so the man said that 20 minutes changed my life. And so there were things like that happened. A man said that his daughter, baby, was in the hospital with a high fever for a couple of weeks, and they told her she won't recover. They told him she won't recover, and if she did recover, she'll be a vegetable.
Wow.
So he heard Bishop Sheen was going to visit. So when he heard the people walking out in the hall, he went out and went right up to Bishop Sheen. And it was possible to do that. He would welcome people to just, when he spoke, he would wait until the last person who wanted to speak to him spoke to him before he left.
Wow.
So all he said was, my daughter is sick. So Bishop Sheen went in and closed the door behind them and prayed over the daughter. He didn't have a chance to explain what it was. But Bishop Sheen looked at him after this most beautiful prayer, he said. And Bishop Sheen looked at him and said, your daughter's fever will break during the night tomorrow. Afternoon, she will go home and she will be normal.
Wow.
And he wrote in, he said, my daughter's 59 years old. She's been a nurse all her life. So I had to write in and thank you as soon as I heard.
Yeah.
And so we heard all kinds of things like that. In Peoria, as a young priest, Father Sheen, when he was at St. Patrick's on the south side where he was assigned, he heard a hubbub on the playground. And this would have been sometime in the mid-20s. Well, an electrical line had fallen onto the playground. And the nuns were yelling at the children to get away and to, you know, bring everybody back. But this little Lebanese boy, Joe Joseph, went up and he picked up the line. And he was stuck there because, of course, he was being shocked by this electricity. Father Sheen heard the noise from the rectory. He was on the porch. He walked over. He heard what had happened. He went to Joe and he said, "Joe, give me your hand." And Joe gave him his hand, and then Father Sheen walked away with Joe, leaving the line behind.
Wow.
So there are all kinds of things from every decade of his life that are really very fascinating.
Do you think that his popularity, obviously the TV shows and everything else, do you think that helped his cause, or did it provide just kind of so much that it was more difficult than maybe, you know, some priests that didn't have that kind of... I mean, he was like the original social media of...
No, it's true. He was the first preacher on radio of any type.
Yeah.
So, and then he had a show for 20 years on the Catholic Hour, which we preached every Sunday night. He preached on the Catholic Hour. Certainly people knew who he was, but we had people write in and said, places from Washington, Oregon, you know, out there, we didn't know he was a Catholic bishop. We were Catholic.
Oh, really?
But we watched him. And then when we found out he was a Catholic bishop, we were really excited about that. Because that was in a context, in a world where Catholicism wasn't very well respected.
Yeah.
And so he certainly did that. He brought respect to the church.
I think we're still in that world. I'm not sure that
No, I think that's true. Although, well...
It's gotten better.
Once in a while. Well, we don't have the KKK too much putting crosses on lawns.
Right. Now we just have secular atheists and...
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Being attacked by the media from left and right.
Yeah.
Not by... Your spirit.
Not by
radio,
EWTN, but but by the rest of them, it seems like.
Another figure that Bishop Sheen, it was known that he often unusual people were attracted to him. So one time he heard about a leper who Lutheran Social Services called him, I think it was. And this is Victor. And he went to see Victor, who had leprosy and was very greatly disfigured living in Manhattan. So he befriended Victor and he would invite him over to dinner once or twice a month. And so he would not hold back from anybody.
Yeah. You don't get a lot of lepers these days.
No, it's true. This was in the 40s, 50s.
Wow. Which is a very, like, communicable disease, right?
Right.
Which is why in the old times they'd cast them out of the cities. So.
Right. I think he had been cured, but he still was disfigured.
Yeah.
So when he was working at Propagation of the Faith, I interviewed people who worked with him there. And they said that a man had called in and wanted to thank Bishop Sheen. Well, Bishop Sheen was known, he only needed 3 or 4 hours of sleep a night. Then he would get up, he would make his holy hour, he would often say private mass if he didn't have one scheduled. Then sometimes he would go out walking on the streets of New York 3 or 4 in the morning.
Wow.
It was often in the morning the housekeeper would say, "Bishop Sheen, where's your overcoat?" Oh, I must have left it somewhere. But it was known by some of them that if he saw someone cold on the street, he would give them his overcoat. And then, he came across this man on the streets, and he said, "You know, how long you been on the streets?" He said, "About 10 years. Where are you from?" "From Boston." He was an alcoholic. And so he said, "Come with me to the station. I'll buy your ticket to Boston. You should go home to your family." So he went to the station, and the man said, "What makes you think I'm not going to go to the first stop and then cash in the rest of the ticket?" He said, "New York's a pretty good place to live on the streets." And Bishop Sheen said, "I'll commend you to Almighty God." Well, the person calling was his brother. Bishop Sheen didn't tell anybody this. The man had left behind his wife and 2 sons and you know, disappeared. They didn't know what happened. And the man, they were so excited that they had him back and that he was going to rehab and going to start living a regular life again. But they credited all to Bishop Sheen.
What an amazing man of faith. Do you? One of the things that always struck me in watching, you know, on YouTube these days, his clips from the TV show, is how magnificently dressed he was.
Yes, he felt that it was important that a priest, as an ambassador for Christ, should look his best because he represented Christ, not himself.
Yeah.
And so that was his idea at the time. And he'd worked, as a teenager, he'd worked in a haberdashery. He'd worked at a men's clothing store. And so he knew about fabric and about presentation. He got 5 o'clock shadows, so he would shave before going out again in the evening, twice a day.
Wow.
With a blade. You know, the electric's bad enough, but
he
Because he wanted to always present himself as, you know, as God, Christ ambassador.
And very funny.
Yes. Sometimes a little bit corny.
Yeah.
But yes, he had that Irish sense of humor and always wanted to use humor to reach people.
Yeah. And I just am fascinated when I listen to him, the just how relevant, you know, that was, what, 70 years ago? That he, most of those were 65, 70 years ago. And it's like he was still speaking today. I mean, just the relevance.
It's true. He wanted to address himself to maybe a sophomore level in high school so we could all understand him when he went on the television show. But always with timeless information that serves today as well as it did 50 years ago.
I know when we had the folks on from the museum, one of the things that just strikes me is the idea that a Catholic bishop would be allowed to have a television show. There's not a snowball's chance today that would ever happen again. No.
Well, because we've become cynical in general about religion.
Yeah.
And that the man of the cloth who want TV or radio shows are in it for the money.
Yeah.
You know, the televangelist, et cetera. And so people don't quite understand that today, I think.
When to go back, when you're looking at the person's life and you know, especially again for somebody that has so much out there, books and radio and TV and all that kind of has to be gone through. If they ever said something or wrote something that was somewhat, you know, questionable or controversial, does that just automatically kind of kick them out, or is it taken in context? Like, well, they were 30 at the time, and then. You know,
everything's in context. You know, Mary Magdalene's a great saint,
yeah,
and she was considered a great sinner. So
Augustine,
right? Yeah. Exactly. And so it doesn't necessarily throw anybody out. But those things are all looked at,
yeah,
by the censors, by the theological experts, and then the role of the postulator, vice postulator, sometimes is to explain those things or to put them in context so they can be understood better.
When it comes to being a martyr, mm-hmm. does that automatically Do you automatically get included as a saint martyr?
There are canonized saints, and a declaration is given, but it has to be proven that they were martyred for the faith.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, and not for other reasons.
Yeah, we had Father Joe on last week, and we were talking about the missionaries in Illinois, and just, you know, some of them were here, and they were preaching, and they were missionaries, but they might have not necessarily been martyred for the faith. You know, they just happened to be in a bad area with, you know, Indians fighting and,
right,
exactly. and everything else. So again, Monsignor Sosman is with us and talking about the canonization process for Archbishop Sheen. We're going to take another quick break. You're listening to Catholic Conversations on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
You're listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio.
I enjoy listening to Catholic Radio because I always find myself edified through the prayer, the rosary, but also the great teaching. Catholic Radio not only reaches the hearts of people, it also reaches into their homes. It transforms individuals, but it also renews marriages and families. That is at the heart of what it means to have Catholic culture. It's the greatest gift we can give to America.
Pledge your support for Catholic Radio in Central Illinois now. Donate online at CatholicSpiritRadio.com.
We are back, Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you are just tuning in, you have to go back and listen to the podcast. Monsignor Sosman has been with us. He is the vice postulator for the cause of canonization for Archbishop Fulton Sheen. He is also the pastor of St. Valentine, St. Mary's, and St. Joseph Church in Peru. So again, Father Monsignor, thank you for taking the time out today and being with us. You obviously have a very, very busy schedule. That brings up a good point, though. Once the canonization process is over for Archbishop Sheen, what are you going to do to fill all that time?
Well, I have one book that I published, Reflections from Rome, Practical Thoughts for Faith and Family. But
now we'll have to have you back on to talk about the book.
I'm happy to do that. I never thought to bring a copy. But in any case, I've got about three books kind of
in the works.
Yeah. Two on Bishop Sheen.
Oh, wow.
You know, so there's a lot of information that I can share, beautiful things about some of the eyewitness testimony, et cetera,
yeah.
that I like to share when I can.
Yeah.
I've got a book on sports meditations and then another book on general meditations for people.
Wow. You are busy.
Well, whatever.
You must be that 3 or 4 hours of sleep a night type of guy, like Archbishop Sheen.
I wish I didn't waste time watching.
If that were the case, the books would be done, right?
There we go.
You were going to say you like to waste time watching what?
I was going to say old movies.
Old movies? Like black and whites?
Yeah, I suppose.
Westerns or what kind?
Oh,
of?
My dad was the Western fiend.
Yeah.
Yeah. So once in a while.
My grandfather is a huge Western guy. You know, he loves John Wayne. And growing up, I spent a lot of time at their house. And, you know, they had like the three TV channels.
Mm-hmm.
And so we would, and every movie that they had in the house was either John Wayne or that's what else they had. He had Tora, Tora, Tora.
Oh, sure. The more movies.
Oh, man. I like those.
But I'm very much the end of the baby boom. So I'll have the TV on in the background when I'm doing any work.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, good. Well, again, thank you so much for being with us. We're going to put you on the hot seat, if that's all right.
Okay.
We'll talk about the gospel for this weekend. If you could, it doesn't have to be super deep, but if whatever strikes you at the moment. And you said you've got some books that you're working on meditation, so this should be right up your alley. This week's gospel is, we're still in the book of Luke, chapter 18. Jesus addressed this parable to those who were convinced of their own righteousness and despise everyone else. Two people went up to the temple area to pray. One was a Pharisee and the other was a tax collector. The Pharisee took up his position and spoke this prayer to himself. Oh God, I thank you that I am not like the rest of humanity, greedy, dishonest, adulterous, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week, and I pay tithes on my whole income. But the tax collector stood off at a distance, and would not even raise his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast and prayed, Oh God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, the latter went home justified, not the former. For whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and the one who humbles himself will be exalted. The Gospel of Luke, chapter 18. Thoughts off the top of your head?
Well, this is definitely something that addresses modern society, I think, our own society, in which there's so many people who criticize so many others without really realizing or even having introspection to see what they might be doing themselves. Part of it maybe is political, part is a means of self-exaltation. You know, but I always remember every time you point the finger at someone, you have three fingers pointing back at you. You know, I think it's important to remember and to be humble in yourself. Yes, you can be proud of everything that you can do, but have some humility. Realize it comes from God.
Yeah.
There's a poem from the Renaissance poet Richard Crashaw it's very short.
You might have heard. Absolutely.
This comes up on Ash Wednesday. This is the Gospel on Ash Wednesday many years. So the poem is, Two went up into the temple to pray. And it starts, Two went to pray, or rather say, One went to brag, the other to pray. One stands up close and treads on high, where the other dares not send his eye. One near to God's altar trod, the other to the altar's God.
And yeah, that is really good.
It summarizes it.
Yeah.
You know, that in humility we find God much better than in exaltation of ourself. And we just need to do that. Take some quiet time.
Yeah.
Bishop Sheen said a holy hour. Take some time when you can and you're in a busy day. Say, God, I'm just who I am because you made me and I try. Help me to try better.
Yeah. I think that the phrase Catholic guilt in recent times, I converted in 2009, so I don't know if it, you know, how recent it is in my, in my experience, it's more recent, but it has this like negative connotation. Like people use it as a negative. And to me, and when I read gospels like this, I look at it and I go, well, the man, that Jesus is praising is the one who had that guilt. He understood that he was a sinner and he understood that, you know, he wasn't worthy of God's grace and blessings. And so, you know, I think, you know, again, I just kind of reflect on that. That even though society says, quote unquote, Catholic guilt is a bad thing, I think if we don't, to me, I think we should feel guilty. I feel like as a sinner, you know, I have that introspection of the fact that I'm not worthy of all the blessings that I receive.
I'm feeling our need for God.
Yeah.
And the point about Catholic guilt on a daily level is not to wallow in our own self-pity or, you know.
Right.
But it's to go to God and say, oh, my God, I'm heartily sorry.
Yeah.
You know, to say your act of contrition, to examine your conscience.
Yeah.
And then in confession, to take that guilt and to offer it up, hold it up to God and say, God, here's my guilt, here's my sorrow, even for things I knew I did wrong, but I was trying to hide, you know, even for myself. And I'm sorry for all these things. And then it's wiped away.
Yeah.
It's not to keep on our shoulder, but to throw behind your shoulder as God forgives you. And then to move on, realizing with that same humility that you will likely fall into some of the same sins or other sins.
Yeah. For me, sometimes it's faster than it should be. But
well, even St. Paul speaks about that.
Yeah.
You know, about having the sins that afflicted him.
Yeah.
So throughout his life.
Yeah, you know what? To jump back ahead or up the page here, I thought it was interesting. The second reading is from 2 Timothy, and Paul, this Paul, right? Mm-hmm. Writes 2 Timothy. Mm-hmm. He says, I have competed well. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. And I just, we were having a conversation on the air the other day about perseverance and about how striving to be a saint, which we're all called to do. I think a lot of times we lose that these days. We look at people like Archbishop Sheen and the other saints, and I think at times we maybe put them so high on a pedestal we think it's unattainable. But really the call of the gospel and the call of the saints for us to be holy is that just of perseverance, mm-hmm. to strive every single day for holiness, knowing that we're sinners and knowing that we're going to fall, but understanding that God loves us and he gives us the sacraments, especially the Eucharist and confession, so that we can, you know, be rejoined to his grace. Mm-hmm. And we're just really, we're called to persevere.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. It's very true. You know, a Catholic who goes to Mass on Sunday, goes to confession once or twice a year, he's considered a model, a great Catholic by others, when really that's the minimal
yeah,
Catholic.
Yeah, that's the minimum.
And so then we're meant to use that and to rise above and to do even more. But I had a parishioner who years ago, she was a journalist, she said, why is it that every time you see that someone is baptized as a Catholic, they call them a devout Catholic in the paper, even if they're even if they haven't been to Mass for years? And it is true. Somebody dies, we say, oh, they're in heaven now. Well, that may be true for many people. They've been sent to God, and we send them forth with great faith. But some people, we think, well, how can you say immediately they're in heaven now?
Yeah.
You know, I hope to make it to purgatory sometimes myself, you know.
I think the greatest day of my life will be the day that I end up in purgatory, God willing that happens. Because I definitely will not be going straight to heaven, I'm sure. And real quick, before we wrap up the show, that brings up an interesting point. Do saints go, people who are canonized as saints, they could have spent time in purgatory, right?
Yeah, I've seen a debate of opinion about that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I would say yes, possibly. I think that's a great possibility.
Nobody's perfect.
Well, especially at canonization, it's an infallible decree. And so if the person isn't in heaven, then they're instantly.
Yeah, because whatever we bind on earth is bound in heaven.
That's
right?
Kind of an obscure theological discussion. But
yeah.
I think it is, it is theoretically possible.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much for being
with
us.
Thank
you for taking out the time. You're obviously a very busy man. We will love to have you back and talk about your book.
Oh, great.
It sounds interesting. And hopefully you find the time to get some of those others done. I'm sure they're works of love.
We do what we can.
Absolutely. Well, you've been listening to Catholic Conversations on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. Again, thank you to Monsignor Sosman for being with us. And again, if you missed this show, if it's Saturday, listen again tomorrow on Sunday. Otherwise, check us out on Apple, iTunes, or Podbean, and or download the Catholic Spirit Radio app. This is Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
You've been listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the generous support of Meyer Bramley Insurance. Serving Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas. Meyer Bramley Insurance can be reached online at mbi.agency or via phone at 844-890-2626. Catholic Conversations, where we talk about faith, family, and finance. Download our podcasts at catholicspiritradio.com.